We've all heard it before. It's who you know. Now, hear why it's so true. Welcome to Social Capital, the weekly podcast where we dive into social relationships and how the investment you put into them establishes trust, reciprocity, and value within your networking community. Your host, Lori Hybe, will connect with top professionals and dive into their best networking stories and techniques to share with you.
Hey, everybody, Lori Hybe here. Welcome to the Social Capital Podcast. Our show notes are found at socialcapitalpodcast.com. You can also follow me on Twitter at LJ Hybe and on Facebook. This week's guest is Rohit Bhargava. He's a trend curator who helps brands and leaders win by learning to see what others miss. He is the Wall Street Journal best-selling author of 5 books on topics as wide-ranging as the future of business, how to build a brand with personality, and why leaders always eat left-handed. His signature book, Non-Obvious, has been read or shared by over 1 million readers, features 15 annual trend predictions, and is in its 8th year of publication. Rohit is the founder and chief trend curator on the Non-Obvious company and previously spent over 15 years leading digital and innovative strategy for global brands at Leo Burnett and Ogilvy. He is the founder of 3 successful companies, advises multiple startups, and teaches marketing and storytelling at Georgetown University in Washington, D.C. His thinking has been featured on NPR, Fast Company, and the Harvard Business Review. And he writes a column monthly for GQ magazine in Brazil. As a non-boring keynote speaker, Rohit has been invited to deliver multiple TEDx talks and taken the stage at over 500 events in 31 countries around the world. Rohit, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks, Lori.
Well, I'm excited and honored that you are here to share your juicy insights with our listeners today.
I'm excited too.
So I'm going to jump right in and ask the obvious question about non-obvious. Why is non-obvious thinking so important?
I think because we're surrounded by so many people who say the same thing, and we're all trying to position ourselves either in our careers as a little bit different or position the products and services that we're selling as being different than other things. And a lot of times we don't necessarily put ourselves in the situation where we can come up with things that no one else comes up with because we all read the same thing and we all pay attention to the same thing. And so really for me, non-obvious thinking is about getting outside of your comfort zone, getting outside of your industry and starting to see some intersections and new insights from a lot of the things that we often don't pay attention to.
Wow, that's a powerful statement right there. And it is non-obvious, but I agree. A lot of us are reading the same materials. We're following the same thought leaders that are inspiring the message that, you know, we're trying to be our own thought leadership. It's interesting that, how do you become the person that has that new idea that no one else has really come up with, right?
Yeah, it is. And it's a really intentional choice for many of us, right? Because if you rely on the algorithm, whichever one you're talking about, whether it's Google's algorithm or Facebook's algorithm or whatever gets served up to you, then you're just going to see what that algorithm thinks you're interested in. And so we have to really be intentional about seeking out other points of view, because otherwise we end up in this circle that I think we're all familiar with, where you just think what you think. And if you meet someone who doesn't think the way you do, you just assume they're an idiot and you move on. And that's not really a good way to, you know, have a society, I think.
I agree with that. I purposely was trying to be more open to perspective this year and putting myself in other people's shoes to understand how they're digesting information and what's really of value and interest to them. So, and that's kind of what you're saying here, right?
Yeah. And I think that the good news is if we use technology in more creative ways, it actually can help with that. I mean, if you imagine the value of something like virtual reality and some of the experiences you can have now where you put on these goggles and all of a sudden you get to experience what it's like to be a refugee or to be a prisoner in solitary confinement. And like these experiences that probably none of us want to have, but now you have this very deep, immersive way of experiencing what it's like. And so you can have empathy for someone who's in that situation without actually being in that situation yourself. And it's way different than like reading about it or watching a news story about it, because this is like deep and immersive and emotional.
Yeah. Well, we all connect based on experiences, which that's really interesting. I never even thought about it to that level. That is really deep.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a way for technology to do it. But I think that the other thing, which maybe is more accessible on an everyday basis, is this idea of reading things that aren't meant for you, which is a big part of what I advise people to do. Like when I go off and do talks or workshops and things like that. And my easiest way of doing that is by going to a bookstore in an airport, for example, and picking up a magazine that you'd never pick up. So for me, being, you know, a dad of two boys, it would be to pick up Teen Vogue magazine, because like, there's no reason for me to read that. But if I do, I get to experience this perspective that's totally unlike anything that I usually would encounter.
Yeah. Wow. That's really, really good insight there. So what is the biggest mistake that most of us make, which keeps us from truly thinking more innovatively?
I think the biggest mistake that we often make is that we lean on our experience, because usually that's a good thing to do, right? I mean, you have experience, and the more experience you have, the more confidence you earn. And so you get used to succeeding by counting on that experience. And the more often we do it, the more we're unable to see where our blind spots might be. And so that very thing that makes us successful, which is having experience and being able to draw upon that to encounter situations and deal with them, also becomes our weakness, because now we can't imagine what it would be like to leave that aside and try something in a totally different way.
Hmm. That's really interesting. So the book Strength Finders talks about just really focusing on your strengths and kind of pushing your weaknesses to the side. But you're really preaching that you need to be aware of what those weaknesses are, right?
Yeah. And I think, I mean, we spend a lot of time doing this, right? We say like, double down on what you're great at, like focus on what you're really good at. And in a team environment, we figure out what our people are. And every book on great management says you find your people's talents and you use them, right? So it makes sense to do that. The problem is that the more we do that, the more we get into this same mindset that works if you're an NFL football team, right? Which is, if you're a great kicker, it doesn't matter how you throw or how you catch. All that matters is that you're a great kicker. The problem in thinking that way for an organization is you don't want one-dimensional people. You need people who can adapt to situations, because as soon as things change in the business and now you no longer need that person to be great at that one thing, you need them to be good at a couple of things. You've spent all this time encouraging them to only be great at that one thing that they've totally lost the ability to learn anything new. And so we end up stuck doing the same thing over and over again. And that is something we have to get out of.
This is really interesting, because as the master of trends, as I'm just going to label you, I've identified recently that it used to be everyone was like a generalist in their trade, right? And I look at it like I was a marketing generalist. I can tackle a lot of different angles in marketing, but now everyone's going down this specialist route, like, oh, I'm really awesome at SEO, or I'm the best social media person out there. But I think that's going to come around and hurt people based on what you're saying. You know, just you need to be nimble in today's world, right?
Yeah, I think the real problem comes from our inability to think that we can do a little bit of both, right? So oftentimes I've called this the sort of thinking that leads people to a chicken strategy, right? And what I joke about a chicken strategy is, like restaurants, if you think about it, no restaurant has a chicken strategy, right? I mean, chicken's just one thing on their menu. And they have lots of other things that make them successful, and they have lots of other pieces of their experience. And the equivalent of the chicken strategy is us saying, well, let me just be like an Instagram expert, right? Let me just be like, let me focus on like my Facebook strategy. And instead of thinking about our businesses in such a way where we say, well, what's my actual strategy to engage people? And maybe Facebook's part of it. We say, let me just come up with one strategy for this one thing and hire the person who's the expert in that. And then we set ourselves up for failure because we're just focusing on this micro thing instead of the bigger picture. And so to me, like, what we have to start to help ourselves to do is figure out how not to be so narrow and instead do what I think they do on, like, if you've ever seen one of those cooking shows called Chopped on the Food Network, right? Like, you know, the way every show starts is they have these four chefs and they say, here are your three mystery ingredients. And you have to make us a appetizer with these three things. And there's like three totally crazy things, like, you know, chocolate chip cookies and, you know, pork belly and like something else. And, you know, they encounter this stuff and all of a sudden they have to count on not being an Italian chef or being a Vietnamese chef. They have to count on being a creative chef, period. And I think that that mentality of having to deal with new stuff, like that's what real innovation is, right? The people who are innovative are the ones who can take this weird batch of stuff and come up with something really great.
And that's where we got chocolate covered bacon from then, right?
That's right. Yeah. All sorts of really cool stuff comes from forcing people to, you know, be innovative, right? Yeah. It's like, what are you going to do with this stuff? It's right in front of you and you got to do something.
No, this is great. I love it. Really good insight. Thank you. So we met, I got to hear you speak. Goodness, when was that? Was that February, I think, is when we initially connected?
Yeah, I think that's right.
You had a fantastic presentation. I was lucky enough to be the one that sat next to you at dinner. And then somehow we got in the conversation of cauliflower, and we learned that you hate cauliflower. So
I
why
do
you hate it so much?
Well, the obvious reason is because it's disgusting. But the, you know, less obvious reason why I make such a big deal out of it is it's actually something that I wrote about in one of my books, which was all about building a network for yourself and building a successful career. And I talked about how not only do I hate cauliflower, but I actually talk about how I hate it. And what that ends up doing is it shares this little weird, quirky, vulnerable fact about me that people somehow remember. They remember that, you know, and yours is a case in point, right? I mean, we spent a little bit of time together and you remembered that one thing, because if you think about it in your life, the only people who you really know what foods they love or hate are your closest family or your closest friends. Mm-hmm. But even though I may not be either, now you know this one thing about me. And so for me, it was an analogy for leadership and for personal connection, which is the more we're able to share these personal things about ourselves, even if they're ridiculous and idiotic, the more people can connect with us.
Yeah, that it's so bizarre, but I love it, because now every time I'm going to see your book, I'm going to think he hates cauliflower.
Yeah, and it's, you know, and for me, it's it, you know, it's not theater, but it's totally authentic. I mean, I authentically really, really don't like it. So, you know, it's not like I have to make up something and then try and remember, right? I mean, the best policy is if you're just honest, you don't have to remember which lie you told which person, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, that keeps it a lot easier, right?
It does.
All right. So, you know, the purpose of this show is to really remove that fear and hesitation that people have around that word networking. And you kind of, you know, dabbled into that a little bit with the cauliflower story here. But can you share with our listeners your most successful or favorite networking experience that you've had?
Yeah. So, well, I'll share maybe two things. One is related to like a habit that I have at networking events. And then one is an actual event.
Okay.
So the habit is actually the title of one of my books, and it's called Always Eat Left-Handed. And the reason why I started eating left-handed was kind of accidental, but I was at a networking event and I realized that if I wanted to meet people and also be able to eat, it was much neater to eat left-handed because my right hand would be always free to shake hands. And for me, it kind of became an analogy for all of a sudden having my head up instead of down, paying attention to my food, being more approachable instead of more like hidden in a corner. And all of these things in my mind sort of stemmed from this one simple choice of eating left-handed. And I'm not, by the way, left-handed. I just chose to eat left-handed. So it's really something anyone can do. And so to me, like, what I wanted to – like the point I was trying to make there was there's these little simple tweaks, these little tiny changes that we can make in our daily lives, and in that case, in a networking event, that can really open our eyes to how we bring our personality to an event like that and therefore better connect with people instead of just showing up and trying to collect as many business cards as possible.
Well, that's really good. And your second one here?
Yeah, and my second one, I mean, I think your question was sort of aimed at a particular event that I think
sure.
I found a lot of great people at. And so there's a lot. I mean, I'm lucky. I do probably 60 different events a year. So I'm at a lot of events. I get to meet a lot of people. I'm usually speaking, which is a great way to break down barriers because you may not know people, but they know you because they just heard you. And so people will be willing to come up to you, and you don't have to, you know, spend as much time trying to be the one who walks up to people, because that's a tough thing to do personality wise. I mean, not, you know, I can be outgoing on stage because I have to be a professional speaker, but my personality isn't that type of person that just randomly walks up to people and says, hey, you know, let's start the party because I'm here. You know, like that's not my personality. Really. So, you know, there's a couple of events where when there's a niche topic of the event, it ends up being a great way to meet people because you know everyone's there because they are passionate about that one thing, whatever that one thing is. And so I did an event, for example, about storytelling. And it was about the future of storytelling. And it was great because everyone there really had this belief that like storytelling was a big deal and storytelling was like the thing, right? And that was really great because we had this shared belief, the shared interest. And a lot of times, if you think about it, you just randomly meet people, you may not have that. But when you do, it really helps to take that conversation to the next level.
Well, I totally agree with that. Just having some sort of common ground makes it so much easier to start that conversation, right?
Totally.
So you travel, you meet tons of people, you're speaking, you've got a huge, you know, flood of individuals that want to chat with you after you've presented, and you're in charge of a handful of businesses. How do you stay in front of or best nurture your network?
I think that the number one thing that I have done at most of the events that I've been at is be willing to show up and stick around. And it sounds like stupid, but a lot of times as a speaker, like it's very easy to say, well, you know, my job is to get paid to be great on stage for an hour. And then like, that's what I got paid for and I'm done. And, you know, a lot of speakers will do that. And so they won't really make themselves available. And then you show up as a speaker who's out there having drinks and hanging out with people till 3 o'clock in the morning. And, you know, as long as I'm still young enough to do that, like, why wouldn't I? Right. I mean, that's the fun part of being at events and speaking. And what ends up happening is you spend, you know, I will with a typical audience in, you know, in contrast to some other speakers, I would probably have 5 or 6 extra hours of bonding time with that entire audience, with the entire group at a particular event than other speakers would. And so, of course, I'm going to get to know people more because we've been hanging out and because we've spent time together. And actually, it ends up driving a lot of the connections that I have because I stay connected with some of these people, not everybody, obviously, but I stay connected with some of these people through social media. Some of them become friends. Some of them say, hey, we've got an event coming at our company and you'd be great for that. And they'll invite me to come and speak at theirs, right? I mean, it drives the business too. So all of those things come from just being willing to show up and hang out.
Well, that's great. And I love that. And I experienced that firsthand and it was fantastic. And, you know, people look at speakers, at big name speakers such as yourself, and there's some intimidation factor, but it was great just, you know, having dinner with you or like, oh, you're real. So thank you.
Thank you. No, it's great. I mean, I try hard not to get too involved in the stage presence, right?
Mm-hmm. So what advice would you offer the business professional who's looking to grow their network?
I think that when you're looking to grow your network, sometimes the challenge is knowing where to be and what to go to. And what I've seen a lot of people do as a mistake is they just look for the largest event that's happening or a place where there's a lot of people. And they say, well, this is the way to grow my network because the most people will be there, right? So I got to be there. And instead, one of the ways that I found I made the deepest connections is showing up to a roundtable dinner with 6 people because you spend a decent amount of time with those people and you really get to know them, or being part of like a mastermind group, right? I mean, all of these sorts of things offer you connection on a smaller scale. And those smaller scale connections are what actually allow you to get to know someone instead of just trading business cards and saying, nice to meet you, and taking off and leaving. Now, in theory, that might, I mean, if your metric for growing your network is how many LinkedIn connections do I have, then great, that worked. But if your metric is how many people do I actually know who I would, you know, I mean, my metric, for example, for Facebook, if I'll accept a friend request from someone is if I pass that person on the street, would I recognize them and say hello?
Sure.
And if the answer is no, then, you know, we're not Facebook friends. We might be connected on some other network somewhere. But my metric for that particular platform is that. And I think that ultimately, like, building your network means having more connections like that, because they'll introduce you to that secondary connection, right? And everybody who talks about this idea of, like, growing your network or where jobs come from or where your next opportunity comes from, it's rarely from that first circle, right? It's usually from the second or the third circle. Someone refers you to someone else who then says, oh, I have this great role and you might be perfect for it.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I'm a huge advocate of the more intimate, like, mastermind groups, as you mentioned. I think it's deeper connections, you know, it's quality over quantity.
Yes, that's right.
All right. So you did mention social media a little bit, but obviously you're out and about speaking and meeting tons of people. Digital networking or traditional networking? Which one do you find more value in?
I mean, there's no substitute for meeting someone face to face because we're still humans, right? We're not robots. I think digital networking, I'm not exactly sure like what that encompasses, but I connect with people digitally, and that's a part of how I interact with people. But there's really no substitute for meeting someone face to face, I think. And maybe that's an old school thing to say, but I just found that to be true.
Yeah, and I think as a speaker, that makes sense that's the, especially one who's hanging around for a few hours after presenting.
I think as a human, that makes sense too, right? Like, you know, I mean, people are people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you have a lot of introverts that feel more comfortable behind the screen and build relationships there too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I mean, there is this, I have a lot of people who I interact with who are introverts. And on some occasions, like, I can feel more introverted too. And the classic description is where you get your energy, right? Like, I get my energy from being around people,
yep,
which technically makes me an extrovert. Whereas, you know, introverts get their energy from having their own time. But I think that when they do connect with people, not in big groups necessarily, but like still that personal connection, even if you're introverted, is a meaningful thing.
Yeah, I agree. There is a lot of truth to that. All right, here's a fun one. If you could go back to your 20-year-old self, what would you tell yourself to do more of, less of, or differently with regards to your professional career?
My 20-year-old self, I would probably tell myself to focus less on doing the thing that I had to do to deliver a particular project and doing more to like share insight or like, I mean, I've always, for example, for me, I've always been a writer. I mean, I've got a master's degree in English, right? So I'm a writer at heart. And it only later in my career, like in my late 20s, did I really start to write, like publish a blog and like publish insights and things like that. And if I look out today, like there's so many young people who are creating content, right? I mean, it's a big thing right now, whether mm-hmm. it's YouTube content or written content or podcasts or whatever it is. And that was starting in my 20s, and I could have started earlier, but I didn't. And so one thing I would go back and tell myself is I would have done that earlier.
Yeah, that's really good insight. I think a lot of people wish they would have started producing content to some degree a little bit earlier. And are you sharing that message to your students at Georgetown University, I hope?
I do. I mean, a lot of them are master's level students, so they're not, you know, starting out in their career.
Sure.
The one thing I tell them is, because the other thing is people always feel, not always, but a lot of people feel pressure to become content creators. Mm-hmm. And they may not be writers and they may not be great video people. And yet they see all this other stuff and they're like, oh man, I got to start a podcast. Otherwise, what am I doing with my life? And I think that's wrong because people have different skill sets. And if you remember, like, you know, this is an old movie, but I love it. Because it's just funny and it's got Steve Martin, who's like hilarious. It's called Dirty Rotten Scoundrels.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you've ever seen it. You know, there's a guy in this, Michael Caine, right? His character. And he realizes, and he talks about it early on in his life, that he wanted to be an artist, but he didn't have any talent. But he realized that what he was good at was identifying great culture and great art. And he used that in his case to become a con man. But, you know, there are people who have that ability to curate great things, who can find interesting things out there, even if they didn't create it. And I think that we should embrace that skill set if we have it more, instead of just feeling like we've got to always create stuff. Because you know what? There's a lot of noise out there. And the more noise there is, and the more content there is, and the more people who really aren't that good who are creating stuff, the more value there's going to be in people who can curate the best stuff.
Yeah.
And we're going to need that person. And so if that's your skill set, like, put that out in the world instead. And don't try and create something new. Just say, look, these are the best things about this topic, and this is what you should be paying attention to.
Oh, that's really good advice. I think everyone's trying to always find that latest, greatest thing. But going back to what you said earlier, it's just regurgitating someone else's opinion.
Right.
Good. Okay. So we've all heard of the 6 degrees of separation. Now, who would be the one person that you'd love to connect with? And do you think you could do it within the sixth degree?
Well, I think the theory of 6 degrees of separation is you could connect with anyone. So mm-hmm. I'm sure I could connect with pretty much anyone. I think there are some people who are really fascinating for what they stand for. Like, I think there's a, let me see if I can recall what her title is, but she's from Jordan, the Queen Rania of Jordan, who's just been like an amazing force for all kinds of awesome stuff in the world. And she's someone that I really admire. So if there was like some 6 degrees of separation that would allow me to meet her, I think that's who I would choose.
That is a cool answer. And I'm not super familiar with her, but I'm definitely going to look her up after we're done recording this, because that's probably the most non-obvious answer that someone's given me to that question. You like what I did there?
Yeah, that's great.
Okay.
Like, on brand.
All right. So as a, you know, business owner and someone who's constantly reading, and, you know, we never want to stop learning. So I'm always interested in hearing what book my guests are reading right now. So what's on your nightstand right now?
Oh man, I'm always reading a bunch of different books at once. So sometimes they're business books. I'm lucky because I get a ton of business books. So there's never any one book that I'm reading from a business book perspective. But let's see, what was one that I finished recently that I really liked? There's a book by Tim Harford, who's an economist. It was called like 50 Inventions That Changed the World, or something like that, something along those lines. Was really great and an easy read.
Okay.
And I enjoyed that. And then there's, I like a bunch of like historical fiction too, because it takes like stories from the past and like reinvents them. And so there was a book that had been out for a while, but I recently read it. It was called The Professor and the Madman.
Okay.
And I thought that was really great. And it was about the creation of the Oxford English Dictionary.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Sounds really interesting. Thanks. I have not heard of either of those, so I'll definitely do a little research on that as well. All right. Any final word or advice to offer our listeners with regards to growing and supporting your network?
No, I think, I mean, the thing I try most of all is to engage with people with kindness and give them as much of my time as I can afford to do, and to take advantage of those moments when I'm out and away from home. Because when I'm back home and I'm writing or I'm hanging out with my family and stuff like that, that's, you know, that's time when I'm not really doing any networking. And so I try and take advantage of those moments when I am out there, because I know those are the times when I'm going to go out and make those connections. And so I see it a little bit as work, but I also enjoy it. And it ends up growing the network at the same time, which is great for all sorts of business reasons.
Yeah, no, that's really good. I like that. And just taking advantage of the moments, I thought that was a really nice statement there. Because it makes sense. And it's all about the moments, right? That's networking, it's relationships, it's business, it's life. So really, really sound. All right.
That's right.
Rohit, if anyone is interested in getting in contact with you, what's the best way that they can reach you?
I have a website and a blog, and it's all just my name. So rohitbhargava.com. And you can visit the blog from there. You can see lots of videos of me having done like talks in various places. So everything's basically available from there.
Cool. And we will include those links in the show notes. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
This wraps up our episode of Social Capital. A huge thank you to Rohit for taking the time to connect with us. Join us next week for another great guest as we continue the conversation on networking and building your community. If you need me, send an email to Lori@socialcapitalpodcast.com. Otherwise, we will see you next week.
That's all for this episode of the Social Capital Podcast. Be sure to visit socialcapitalpodcast.com for show notes, more episodes, and to check out our free ebooks on business and networking.